What up, peeps? All right, yo, I'm just saying it right now. I am so pumped for this episode because we have Sergeant Bill Cannon. Yes, you heard that right. Sergeant Bill Cannon, okay? A retired NYPD homicide detective. He's going to be on the show. I am obsessed, okay, with Forensic Files. I love the Investigate channel, okay? I don't know how. I mean, my wife's obsessed with it, and I was just like, I don't like watching people, you know, unfortunately getting murdered and stuff. And then I'm watching it, and I want to be a detective, okay? Now, every time I look on the walls when I visit my buddy's house, I'm looking for blood splatter, all right? I'm looking for shell casings on the floor. I'm looking for DNA, okay? I'm looking for loose hair. Why? Because at the end of that, it has DNA. And what I found out, we all have different DNA. Hence, if your DNA is on a crime scene, it's you, all right? You done did it. You killed that person. How's your DNA on there, bro, if you did it, all right? We are going to talk to Sergeant Bill Cannon. I'm going to be his partner on this show, all right? Because I got questions for him, man, because he lived the life that I'm watching. I'm DVRing his life, all right? So I'm calling this man up now. NYPD, 27 years, homicide detective, Bill Cannon. We're calling him, and we're going to get down and dirty. Oh, the phone's ringing. Homicide.
Hello?
Bill Cannon.
Hey, what's going on?
What is going on? I was just, you know, I was giving a little intro to the show, and I said, for 27 years, you lived the life that I'm DVRing every day.
That exciting.
Oh, again, there's a little bit, you know, I'm watching the Forensic Files. Do you watch Forensic Files? I mean, you're retired, so
once
is
in a while, you know, some a lot of the TV shows, they're not that realistic, so I can't really stomach watching something, you know.
Well, Forensic Files is hooey, is what you're saying? It's all
fake. No, not that show, but some police shows. Like, I can't watch Blue Bloods and SVU, that gets a little sickening. I want to vomit some of the stuff on that.
Wow, so you're not walking into crime scenes back in the day wearing a suit and awesome Ray-Ban sunglasses and kneeling down to a body and coming up with like a one-liner for your fellow police officers?
Or sitting on the staircase where there's blood all over the place so you can get a good shot right next to the body, you know.
So you're not just lifting up like the sheet and being like, oh yeah, strangled, you know.
He looks dead, you know, he looks dead to me.
He looks dead to me, wow. So, I mean, all right, so, I mean, I'm going to get a little gruesome because, again, I've been DVRing, your life. I'm a wannabe detective at this point. You've seen the bodies.
Yeah, I was in homicide for almost 10 years, you know, so, and it was in Manhattan North where there was a lot of murders when I first went there in 2011, and I went to homicide from the 2-3 precinct in Spanish Harlem that was no stranger to murder either. So, I got a lot of work up in Manhattan North.
Was the tummy always churning, or were you like, all right, yeah, I'm used to it, you know?
No, you know, you don't just go to homicide with 3 years on a job. By the time I went to homicide, I had 17 years on the job.
Oh, smokes.
So, so I had already seen a lot of stuff, you know, and I had done a lot of stuff as a cop and as a sergeant. So it wasn't too shocking to me, you know. And I, you know, also, one of the worst things I'd ever seen was the bodies from 9/11.
You know? Yep.
I had worked at the morgue, not every day, but I had worked numerous times at the morgue and saw some of the bodies that came to the morgue from ground zero, and that was some of the worst condition of bodies I'd ever seen.
Wowzers. I mean, I'm seeing reenactments, so I'm not seeing what you're seeing, but the reenactments, you know, I'm not getting nightmares, but I'm thinking, what, like, if I'm a cop and it's my first like kind of dead body and I'm scared to go in the room, are the cops kind of busting my balls, or?
Yeah.
With their busting balls.
They would eat you alive if you got a little, you know. But, you know, the thing about a body is not just seeing it. It's the smell gets you sick. You know what I mean?
Yikes. Can you describe it? You know, can you put me in there? Again, I want to be in the room with you. You know,
it depends. If a body's been there for a couple of days and it's a summertime, you can't even
see it. Oh, Lord.
It's sickening. The smell is actually sickening. Wow. And you can smell. You know right away, they call it a DOA, dead on arrival. Shoot. You can throw a DOA from the street when, you know, in the summertime, you know. And that's the part that, you know, and rookie cops, they have to sit on DOAs, meaning they have to wait there until the morgue gets there to pick the body up.
Am I allowed to say I don't want to?
No, well, yeah, you could say that.
As a rookie, like, I don't want to.
If you were ordered to do that by your sergeant, you can't say, oh, I'm not doing it, you know. You could say, well, then find a different line of work.
Wow, so I'm fired if I don't want to do it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what rookie cops do. Everyone's, I sat on DOAs when I was a rookie cop, you know, and that's all part of the job. That's actually sometimes even a punishment.
That's a punishment.
If someone does something wrong, the sergeant can say, all right, the next three DOAs you're getting, you know. And that can be like a little bit of a punishment rather than taking a day for them or taking hours from them. You're going to get the next three DOAs, you know?
Yeah. Now, have you done, again, one of my new, like, favorite sessions is the criminal confessions. I'm loving everything in that interrogation room. That thing, I just love how they all, like, they tell this elaborate story and then everything just slowly changes. And have you interrogated dudes?
Yes, but I mean, one of the things that, you know, I was a sergeant in homicide, so I had a team of six detectives, and they were all really experienced guys, and they were so good at interviewing people, interrogating people, that I would marvel at how good they were, and I would sometimes count on them to get a confession, you know.
And so are you watching it through the double, like,
yeah,
mirror
it through
glass?
Through the glass, yeah, and, you know, it's a one-way glass where you can see in, but they can't see out.
Yeah. But they know you're there, though.
Yeah, well, sometimes they know you're there. But detectives, you know, it's not like TV. Sometimes it can take 6 hours, 8 hours, 24 hours to get a confession. You know, nothing happens quickly, because what everyone has to understand is that everyone on this earth lies. Mm-hmm. Whether you're the president to the Pope, you're lying, you know. You're lying to protect yourself. And people, even good people lie, you know. I mean, they lie to protect themselves till they understand where you're going. So think about people that are criminals.
Can you sniff out a lie? Are you, like...
Yeah, well, you can tell, you know, as you're trained, and over years and years, you can read body language. And you can tell when someone's not telling the truth. And one of the things a good investigator does is he goes in and knows many truths before he even starts to interview someone. So he, you know, if you say to someone, have you ever been arrested before? You already know they've been arrested 10 times, but you just want to see what they say to you. So if you ask them, have you been arrested before? The guy says no. And then you say, well, what happened on this day? And what happened on that? And that deflates them. That sort of takes their whole, moxie away. Now they know that you know they're a liar, you know.
Mm.
And there's other little subtle things, you know. Oh, where do you live? Or if you haven't been, do you have any kids? No. Who's this woman in Brooklyn that you have a kid from? And, you know, that, when you know all these things, they think, oh, how do the police know all this stuff? And you sort of, you know, strip them naked with your knowledge, and then they start coming around and start to tell the truth.
And they start to spill the beans. Now, the classic thing is where it's like, where they like sign over, like where I'm going to talk to you. Now let's pretend I'm the criminal and I'm asking you just for advice because, you know, we're buds. Are you going to say you might as well just talk to him and tell him everything you know? Or should I get that attorney, which they always like kind of...
Well, look, anyone that is... If I get in trouble...
Yeah.
I wouldn't talk to the police.
You want that attorney?
Yeah, of course. Of course, you know.
Because they always say, we're going to give you one last chance to talk to us. And then, like, I'll get my attorney.
It doesn't help, you know. I don't like to let this cat out of the bag because I want criminals to talk. But
this is true.
It doesn't help you to talk to the police, you know. Because, and if down the road you say you're arrested and you're going to make some deal, you're going to make it through your attorney. But if you start talking, everything you say is going to be, as in the Miranda rights, is going to be used against you.
Ah, yes, you know? That's true.
So, I mean, it's even, you know, even as something as simple as being pulled over for a traffic violation. The first thing every good cop does, he says, license, registration, insurance card. Do you know why I pulled you over? And your answer should be no. Because if you say, yeah, I was speeding, yes, I blew that light, yes, he's going to use that statement in traffic court.
I was on my phone, and even if he didn't see me for the phone, I got a phone ticket.
Yeah, right, well, if you said I was on my phone, you just admitted to it. You know, you just made it easy for him.
And you were going 50 and a 30.
Yes.
So, oh, wow, so I got double tickets.
The answer for a educated consumer that goes to Sims, the answer is, no, I don't know why you pulled me over. Because now he can't use your statement in traffic court against you.
Wow. Do you think cops hate it when, this is, the new pop thing now, and I'm also, kind of YouTube and, the audits and stuff where everyone's recording the cops, and the cops are please turn off your phone.
Yeah, I think that makes their job extremely difficult, and that everything's being recorded. And, everyone thinks they're a street lawyer, too,
That's true.
And everyone thinks they know the law, when in reality they don't know the law. Police have a lot of power.
That's true.
Just because you're recording something doesn't mean they're going to relinquish their power, as long as they're acting within the scope of the law. The law's on their side.
So there's no point of recording?
No, I'm not saying there's no point, but I'm saying that adds another layer of, at least from the police point of view. It adds another layer of difficulty. And yeah, you may want to record I'm not telling you not to record. A lot of times the police have that camera on them now anyway. A lot of people, police wear the body-worn video.
Yeah, that is true. So I get pulled over, Mr. Sergeant Bill Cannon, he's saying, don't turn on your phone. Just talk to him.
I'm not telling you not to. I'm just saying that adds another level of antagonistic relationship between police and the community when people are recording them as they get pulled over.
All right. Well, speaking of the pulled over, the PBA cards, I had an uncle I have an uncle, but he was the chief of police in Carlstadt, New Jersey, and he gave me this gold card that had my name engraved on it. If I'm sure you've given people a PBA card?
Sure.
Yeah. Now, if I give that to the officer and if he still gives me a ticket, is it insulting you?
Well, no. The way to present a PBA card or an SBA card or any police courtesy card is right at the beginning of the encounter, not after you get the summons.
Oh no! Right beginning. I give him my uncle told me to show you this.
Right as you get pulled over. Look, my uncle is a chief at Carlstadt Police. I don't know if there's anything you can give me courtesy. And if they're going to give you courtesy, they're going to give it to you right then, because police have discretion over whether they issue you a summons, issue you a warn and admonish, and just, see if everything's on and send you on your way. They don't have to write you a summons.
But if he gives you the card back, is that kind of pissing on you?
No, because...
take this back. I don't need this.
Yeah, hopefully that they would give courtesy.
And it's just because he's my uncle that I get this.
Right, not all police will give courtesy. And look, I've been pulled over in every state in the world. I've been pulled over numerous times in Florida, and I've never had a problem. I was always given courtesy.
Because I'm Sergeant Bill Cannon, who's got the coolest action movie name.
Yeah, I'm retired now, but I've always been given courtesy. And many people that I gave cards to that weren't even related to me were my friends. They told me that, they were given courtesy based on the card I gave them when they were pulled over. That's pretty nice.
So it's like the hidden rule, sort of? If you see the card, chill it out.
Well, it is, but it's also how you present it and your demeanor and how respectful you are.
So if I'm here's my uncle, Sergeant Bill Cannon, get away from me, okay? Then I'm probably getting a ticket.
Like that, you're going to get a summons.
I'm going to get a summons.
If you're very humble in the way you present it, you have possibly a chance of getting courtesy, but I'm not saying you got 100% chance.
All right, so if I'm drunk behind the wheel, I give him my card, I'm probably not driving home.
Yeah, it doesn't work for, murders and assaults and DWI. It doesn't work for that.
So I murdered my whole family. I get pulled over. I show them that I know Bill Cannon. I'm not headed to Mexico.
No, don't show them a PBA card. That's not going to help you.
That's not going to do anything. Okay. All right, well, that's good to know in case, I got to take out the family. So, all right, that's something. All right, now, you said, All right, so if I'm lying to you, what are we looking for? Because, you know, being a human lie detector is pretty badass, I might say. Now, what are we looking for if I'm sitting across from you and you're like, were you there 2 days ago?
Well, you know, you know certain truths, so you go into the interrogation room knowing certain things. For example, say you were on the scene of someone that got stabbed in front of a bar.
Mm-hmm.
I already know from talking to other people that you were there. Or I may even have the video from the front of the location.
Ah, that's true. Ah, yes.
You know, so, and if I say to you, did you see what happened? And you say, no, I wasn't even there. And you say, you know, what do you mean you weren't there? And then you say, I wasn't there. I have five people that told me you were there.
Then it changes to where I had a little altercation with him, but I didn't kill him, you know.
Right. No, but I'm not even saying that you killed him. I'm just saying maybe you were a witness. I've had people standing right next to someone that got shot to death, and they said, oh, when the shots were fired, I was looking the other way. That's not believable.
That is true. That is good.
You know what I mean?
Have you ever wanted to leap across the table and like, you bastard, like, you've seen what he did, and you got to, like, talk to him like you're, you know, hey, we're buddies. I'm here. You know, you seem like you're a truth-telling guy. You know, have you ever been like, God, I want to just jump over this table and kind of slap you across the face a few times?
Of course, because, you know, you interview and interrogate some really bad people. You know, how about murders of a kid?
Oh, you know? Shoot. Okay.
Tough to keep you cool, but you have to, you know. Or the rape of a child. You know, it's
that's some Chris Hansen type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to keep your cool so that your job is to get them to confess and then put them in prison for as long as you possibly can. You know?
That's for sure.
If you lose your cool and jump across the table, you know, you're not doing your job.
All right. Yeah, that's true. Now, you've looked for the blood splatter on the walls. You've looked for the shell casings. Have you found, like, a piece of hair with the DNA to solve this big murder?
Well, you know what it is? There's the NYPD... Unlike a lot of small departments, we have a crime scene unit. So when we have a murder or a high-profile case, we call the crime scene unit, and they do the forensic collection. But they're directed by the detectives and the supervisors on the scene as to what we're looking for as far as evidence. But they're the experts in as far as the collection of the evidence. Yeah. We've had, you know, those smoking gun type pieces of evidence. We had this guy who was a nutcase. He went into a doctor's office during the day, and he stabbed this female doctor to death. Like, I don't know. It was just on the Upper East Side. It was like a real high-profile case.
Oh, wow.
And it turned out he came in with a suitcase, and he left the suitcase there and ran out. The crime scene unit actually lifted a palm print off the suitcase, and that's how he was identified.
But you can't always
depend on forensic evidence like that. That's going to be like a smoking gun that IDs the guy, you know. And there was a case on the Upper East Side also of this dancer from Ohio named Catherine Woods, and she was murdered by her ex-boyfriend, and he had an alibi and everything like that. And crime scene spent 4 days in the crime scene, and then they sent the OCME, the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner's forensic recreation team there, and some way, using some chemicals, they recovered a bloody fingerprint behind the bed on the wall, and it turned out to be her boyfriend, and that nailed the case shut, you know.
Damn, are you missing this? Are you missing, like, that you're off today and that you're solving a murder?
I've been out 7 years now. I've been off, you know, I retired.
And you're rocking the stand-up comedy now.
Yeah, I'm doing
that's kind of getting the excitement going.
Stuff. Well, you know, I've been on 6 episodes of that TV show, The Perfect Murder.
Oh, that's so cool. How did you come across that?
Well, actually, a retired detective from Manhattan South Homicide is one of the producers of that show.
That's so cool.
When I started seeing other guys that I had worked with on the show, I just called him up and I said, hey, can I be on the show?
Yeah, throw me on. You know?
Yeah, he says, sure. He goes, and this is how easy it was. He goes, you're going to be the lead of the next episode.
But I
had to go in an audition, and I did well in the audition, and they came in. And I've done 6 episodes, but I was just told, like, about a month ago that they're not getting a season six. They have five seasons, so the show's over. So my acting career, as far as The Perfect Murder goes, is over.
Damn, but you still got the box set with you in six episodes. So that's dope.
Yeah, no, I did. You know, that it was great experience. You know, great acting experience that, you know, I wouldn't have gotten.
Are there any cases that you were involved in that they're going to try to, you know, put into a show?
They already have. They did a couple of cases that I gave them.
Oh, wow.
They did a case, the Carmen Quinones and Ruben Frederick murder on the in Spanish Harlem that happened December 1st, 2001. I gave them that case, and that was a very popular episode.
How do you give them a case? You just tell them what you did?
Well, no, well, I actually had the whole file and everything, and they went through it, and you speak to the writer for about an hour or an hour and a half.
Hmm.
And you tell them about the case, and the writer writes the episode from what you tell them.
Wow. Now, like, I want to get in on Forensic Files. Like, I want to be – I'm 36. Now, my wife has told me I'm too old to get into the game. Is there any – can I get into a class now where I'm working on crime scenes, give or take, in 5 years?
You know, I don't know if you could – I don't know what the rule is anymore as far as police departments. Some police departments let you go on even, you know – I don't even know if there's an age limit anymore.
I mean, like, to be – like, I don't know. I just want to do – I want to go to a crime scene and I want to look for clues.
It sounds more romantic than it is. In reality, crime scene detectives, you know, they're exposed to all kinds of blood, pathogens, diseases, hepatitis A through B, C, D, you know, or HIV, AIDS. So it's not as glamorous as it shows on TV.
Yeah, because it makes it look pretty cool on TV. You got the person with the voice that's like, and then he looked into the room and found the fingerprint, you know.
They wear those Tyvek suits, you know, from head to toe. You know, those all those white suits that protect your clothing.
Well, I wanted to wear a suit.
Yeah, well, you wear that under your Tyvek suit, because if you wear your suit and you get tainted blood on it and you take it home to your family, that's not so good.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't think my wife would appreciate that. All right, I'll wear the white suit, I guess.
Yeah, it protects you, you know.
Hmm.
I mean, we used to do, you know, as homicide detectives and a homicide sergeant, we'd walk into the crime scene just in our suits, and the crime scene guys would go, "Hey, put these booties on or put this Tyvek suit. You know, what are you doing? You know?" Because we were just like, so you look, you walk into through the stairs or get in an elevator of a housing project, and it's loaded with piss. You know,
God,
you're not wearing a Tyvek suit. You know, so
all right, yeah, maybe leave the Gucci suit at home.
Yeah, all exactly. Right. What am I even getting dressed up for this job?
Yeah, well, in CSI, they always look so spiffy, you know?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, the image of it. We had to wear suits and ties, but that's the image of a detective. But, you know, what you're wearing may be clean, but the work is pretty dirty.
Did you have to wear a bulletproof vest?
Yeah, well, when we went out to apprehend somebody, yeah, we would wear all of that. We'd wear the full battle regalia. But when you're just going out on cases, and you're not specifically, say, which is sort of stupid because you can't predict when someone's going to take a shot at you.
That's true.
But for the most part, if we were going out in cases just to speak with people, we wouldn't put the vest on.
So you'd make fun of me if I wanted to throw on my vest to speak to somebody?
You know, you're always better safe than sorry. But, you know, the public, you know, they're going to be a little intimidated by someone wearing a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, that's true. Do you still have a bulletproof vest in your closet?
No, they took it back from us when we retired. I would have loved to have kept it.
I know. I want one. All right. Yeah. Dang. Is it heavy? Is it like a burden to wear?
It's Kevlar, so it's semi-light, but, you know, they cost like $500-$600.
Shoot. So. Have you ever got – I mean, it's a classic question. Have you ever got shot at? Have you ever shot someone?
I actually got shot at a month before I came on the police department in a robbery.
You got shot at?
Yeah, but that was a month before I came on. It was in 1984. But as far as the job, I've been around gunfire on the street, but not specifically been fired upon. And luckily, I never shot anyone in my almost 27 years.
You never pulled it out and just shot around?
No, I pulled it out lots of times. I just never shot anybody, though.
But you shot around in public?
No, I never
shot it.
No, I never fired in the life.
Wow, 27 years, never shot it.
And you know, when I first came on the job too, I wasn't in the rockin' precinct when I first came on the job, because in 1990, when I made Sergeant in 1989, but that year the 3-4 precinct had 129 murders, just the 3-4 precinct. And I remember talking to a lot of the sergeants from the 3-4 precinct. They told me that their entire 4 to 12 tour, 40% of the cops had been in shootouts.
Now, were you looking for that? Were you kind of like the Mel Gibson and Lethal Weapon? Were you looking to run down the street in your boxers firing around?
Yeah, I did 6.5 years in anti-crime, which is a highly, you work in plain clothes. If you're going to get in a shooting, that's the unit you're going to be in that gets in a shooting. But luckily, I just didn't get in a shooting. And probably because, I worked in the 2-4 rather than the 3-4.
Were you craving action?
Yeah, I was.
You're like, why can't I be shot at today? Damn it!
Well, I mean, I wasn't looking to get shot at.
No, all right, fair enough.
Look, I think your whole hope as a cop is that if you do get in a shooting, it's a justifiable shooting, and you come out on top and you go home, as they used to say at the range, with the same amount of holes that you went to work with.
That's good.
You go home.
Not like an action movie. Again, like I'm thinking I want to be a cop. I want to be like Axel Foley. I want to jump out of buildings while they blow up and I'm like, shooting multiple people, It's not like
that. Day to day, police work is boring. But there's times, there's those 1 minute or 2 minutes once a month or twice a month, three times a month, that the scariest shit in your life will happen. But it's not every single day, every single hour. If it was, I don't know who would want to be on this job.
You'd have to be fair enough.
SEAL Team 6 to want to have that kind of excitement.
That's true. Have you ever had to change
so much,
Yeah, that's true. Have you ever had to testify in court?
Oh, yeah, numerous times.
Numerous times. To put people away with your...
I was in anti-crime both as a cop and as a sergeant, and we made a lot of high-profile arrests, mostly for robberies, shootings, things like that. And, the cases always went to court, whether it was grand jury or whether the case went to trial. So, yeah, you testified all the time. When I made sergeant, I testified a lot when I was in anti-crime, but when I went to homicide, I tried to stay away from testifying because I didn't love going to court, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, court's not that cool.
Detectives live in court. Detectives go to court probably once a week at least. They're always in court.
And let me just, because I'm a movie buff and now I'm super pondering. What is your favorite cop movie?
My favorite cop show of all time is The Wire on HBO.
Oh, no, movie. I'm going movie.
Oh, movie.
Are we talking the Lethal Weapons, the Die Hards, or a Departed type of kind of reel, I guess?
Even though it's so dated, I love the French Connection.
Old school.
With Gene Hackman and, Roy Scheider.
Was that kind of the motivation to get into the game?
No, my father was a cop, and then my younger brother actually went on the force before me, and I didn't really want to do it. I went to college, I had a degree in broadcast journalism, and I sort of wanted to go a different route. And then I got out of college and I wound up tending bar for 4 years. And I took the police test and I said, I'm going to take this job. And I took it. I really liked it right away. I really loved being a cop. Look, 27 years is a long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah. You say that and people, especially like young comics, they don't understand what the hell 27 years is,
That is true.
It just flies right over their head. You say, I was a cop for 27 years. I don't think they fully digest that,
Yeah, and how do you hit sergeant?
You have to take a test, a civil service test.
And you just pass it and you're in?
Yeah, you pass and you make sergeant. Detective is different. You go to an investigative unit, like narcotics or public morals, or you work in a detective squad as a white shield. And the law is once you go to an investigative unit as a police officer, in 18 months by state law, they have to promote you to detective. That was passed because the city used to abuse the shit out of people. People could be in an investigative unit for 5 years, 6 years, and they wouldn't promote them to detective. It was a joke. So the detectives union sued the city, and they forced them to promote people after they had 18 months on an investigative unit.
And what was the gun of choice? What was your sidearm?
When you first came on, you didn't really have a choice.
And everybody gets the same gun?
Well, you had a 38 caliber Smith & Wesson or Ruger. Those were the two choices.
Which one did you pick?
The 90s, we were so outgunned by perps on the street that Bill Bratton, when he came to the New York City Police Department from Boston, he pushed hard for us to get 9mm. So I think it was the early 90s, we switched over from 38 caliber revolvers to 9mm. And the big advantage of that was, look, a 38 caliber revolver holds 6 shots.
Mm-hmm.
A 9mm holds 16. So that was the big thing. Because there was a cop years ago, his name was Scott Goodell. He was 21 years old, and he got in a gunfight with this real badass guy. And he emptied his gun, and he was reloading, and the guy came up on him and executed him.
Damn.
While he was reloading.
Because he only had 6 shots?
Right, exactly.
Oh, shoot. All right.
So that incident sort of made the city back us up as far as getting, more serious guns, at least higher capacity magazines, you know, because 6 shots, when the perps have, 14 or 16 shot banana clips, they had a distinct advantage. And back then they were carrying these machine pistols too, like Tech Nines and, people would call them Uzis, but an Uzi is actually a well-made Israeli machine pistol. They didn't have Uzis. They more or less had the street version, which are like Tech Nines, and they could be fully automatic.
Man.
Yeah, it was nasty. I'll tell you, in the 90s, it was nasty, man. A lot of people were getting killed on the streets, and cops were shooting a lot of people back then, too.
Do you still have your gun, or you got to give that back?
Yeah, no, I have all my guns. I actually, when I retired, I bought a baby Glock 9mm. That's smaller. It's easier to conceal.
Just to feel safe, or just because I want one?
No, because, to feel safe. And, when I go into the city, I always carry.
Always carry.
I'm the only comic that has a gun on his ankle when he's telling jokes.
That is true. You're at, because I know you're at Lucy's, and you're carrying in there?
No, only when I go into the city.
Only in the city, okay.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm in Westchester and I go shopping in a mall or something like that, I may go strapped. But when I'm in the city, I'm always, I take an acting class every Tuesday night. I think my class is starting to see my gun on my ankle. I'm like, what's that?
Now, if I bought a gun, all right, but, I guess off my friend, or I'm trying to make it weird. But, and I'm at Walmart, and a dude comes in and he starts shooting the place up, and then I shoot him. Am I going to jail? I mean, I do have a gun that I shouldn't have, but yet I am the hero.
Yeah, you could get arrested for, unlawfully carrying a firearm.
But I wouldn't get in trouble for murder?
No, because it would be justifiable, but you would still get arrested for, carrying an illegal firearm.
Am I in jail for a little bit, or am I headed out? Right,
I don't think so. I know the circumstances that you just underlined, I don't think that you would go to jail for that.
All right. I always wonder if I could be a hero. Oh, and this one. Let me just ask this one. Now, if someone, let's say I'm sleeping and I hear someone playing with my front doorknob, and then I walk over. Now, I do have, like, my father-in-law. He gave me, like, a ninja sword. Now, if this gentleman breaks into my house, and once he sticks his head in, if I chop his head off, am I in trouble or I'm good to go?
Well, if someone gets inside your house,
he pokes his head in after he jimmies a lot.
Well, that's a little bit, he has to physically get in your house.
He just put his head in, though.
Well, I'm not going to be your attorney and tell him that.
Because I will play this back if someone comes in. And then I will say, Sergeant Bill Cannon said I'm allowed to chop his head off.
No, you can defend your home, and you can use deadly physical force to defend your home, but the set of circumstances you said, that if someone's still outside, then they're not really a threat to you.
Oh, no, but if he opens the door.
Well, he has to pretty much come in, and then.
So I have to say, come on in, and then once he puts his foot in my hallway, I can chop his head off.
Right, then you can pretty much defend your home.
That's so cool. All right, and then it's just they clean the body up, and I'm sitting at home still watching TV.
You're good to go.
Good to go. Okay.
You can call the forensic team in.
Do you recall any heroes? Have you ever talked to somebody who saved the day, who didn't wait for the police and took it upon themselves?
Look, you remember that Bernard Goetz case years ago? That's maybe before your time. The guy who shot four guys on the subway that were trying to rob him. Do you remember that case?
No, but I'm going to look it up.
It was like 1984, but he was mugged on the subway
by four dudes.
Yeah.
And he gunned them all down.
He actually got arrested for carrying an illegal firearm.
Ah, similar situation.
Yeah, he did I think 6 months or something.
He did six months for the illegal gun?
Yeah. Well, they wanted to make an example of him because, you know, he shot people on the subway, even though after a trial, he was found to be justified.
But yeah, they were all bad, though.
Yeah.
But would Judge Bill Cannon let him go, or he deserves that 6 months in prison?
No, I mean, look, he had an illegal firearm, and they wanted to make an example of him. It was a real high-profile case. And I guess if they just let him walk the regular...
Then everyone's going to carry guns, I guess. And,
yeah, exactly. I think that's what they're afraid of, you know.
All right. Well, then I'll just... we'll kind of sum up. I mean, I'm definitely going to need you back because I got so many forensic file questions. But for this one, for the last question, I'll sum up. Do you think people would kind of Wild Wild West style? Should we all be carrying just to protect ourselves, or more guns equals more problems?
Yeah, I think that more guns equals more problems. I think that, you know, sometimes you really – it's not just carrying a gun. You have to be trained with the gun because if someone gets in a fender bender, you know, they're going to come out with their gun, you know, in their hand. That'd be a little ridiculous, you know. And I know there's states that are like that, like Texas. Supposedly, like in Texas, everyone's got, you know, the shotgun in the back of the pickup truck.
Oh,
and, you know. I heard a story one time that someone went to a Burger King and announced a stick-up, pulled the gun, and it was shot by 14 people waiting online.
Wow. If that is true, that is epic.
Everyone's strapped in Texas, you know. So.
Smokes. But does that make Texas a safer place?
I don't know. I don't really know the answer to that. Look, well, you know, today you got all these active shooters. You got school shooters. You got, you know, it's a scary time we live in. It seems like you're getting an active shooter at least once a month these days.
Yeah, I'll say so. I keep seeing that all over Facebook.
So, I mean, that's one of the reasons, you know, I mean, I'm always, besides the fact that I put a lot of people in prison and I walk around the city and, you know, there's a good chance I could run into one of them. I'm a licensed firearm. So they say, you know, better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So that's what I usually, the rules I live by, you know.
Man, yeah, that's dope. Now on the comedy scene, we'll do that. Are you telling a lot of the cop stories?
I didn't want to do, actually January will be my 5-year anniversary.
5 years, rocking the comedy.
Yeah, 5 years. So I'd say about 40%, maybe a little less, of my material is police material. I didn't want to do all police material because I think that would just sort of, you know, pigeonhole me as that. You know, there's other cop comics like Mark DeMeo.
Yeah, Mark's great, yeah.
Yeah, Mark is excellent. I actually knew him when he was on the job, and I didn't even know he was a comic back then.
Hmm.
But, you know, he probably does more cop material than I do.
Oh, you know? Yeah, no, I've heard, I remember a couple of his bits on him knocking on the doors and stuff. Yeah, no, he's got...
Yeah, no, he's a funny guy. In fact, I used to do a webcast with him called Off the Cuff. We did like three episodes.
Yeah, I remember seeing that one.
Yeah, it was pretty popular, and then, you know, the people that hired us stopped paying us, so we stopped doing it, you know?
That'll do it.
Yeah, but it had a lot and still has a lot of potential. But, you know, we need someone to do it because we're not going to finance it ourselves.
Yeah, now, are you always at Lucy's? Production. What you do the open mic there?
Well, yeah, I've been hosting the open mic on Mondays at Lucy's for I guess about 4 or 5 months, maybe 6 months.
Nice.
And it's pretty popular. You know, usually we get anywhere from 15 to 25 people there on a Monday night.
Shoot, yeah, I'm gonna.
And a lot of people just come there because it's a sort of I don't want to make it too supportive, because I don't want people coming there that don't really have the desire to be a stand-up comic. They just go there and they want to tell stories. I told them one night, I go, this is not, you know, storytelling, and it's not poetry. You know, this is stand-up comedy. Premise, point of view, punchline. Yeah. So don't come up here and tell stories that you're going to tell at a PTA meeting to 22 other women, because it's not... It's not funny, and I don't want to just use women. Guys do that too. They go up there and they tell a long story, and I said, there's no jokes. You have to have jokes, you know.
Right, we're here to laugh, damn it. There you go.
Right, exactly. You know what it's like when people just go up. And many comics are storytellers with jokes, but there's got to be jokes.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like, I'm a storyteller. I don't really do punchlines, but yeah, no, it's got to be funny. That's what it is. I mean, right. Obviously. No, we're here to laugh, you know.
My style too is storytelling with jokes. But there's got to be a few jokes in there, or else, you know, what are you doing? This isn't, you know, it's not, what's that thing, the moth? This isn't the moth, right?
Yeah, you know, you're boring people.
Yeah, exactly. So I stepped on him one, and this woman came up to me, she goes, you know, that's not really fair. I go, no, it is fair. This isn't storytelling, and it's not, you know, what's the other thing I said, it's not storytelling, and it's not poetry.
Yeah, you know? Different open mics.
Stand up comedy, yes. Yeah. So come here with jokes, and you. I go, you're still welcome here. I go, but I just want to tell you, you got to tell jokes.
That's true. Yeah. So, and now you're bringing laughter. Before you're bringing pain to the criminals, and now you're bringing laughter to the people.
Look, stand up comedy. You know, you've been probably doing it longer than me. What you've been doing, like 7, 8 years?
Oh, 10. I think I hit 10 recently. Yeah.
And it's really hard, right? It's and just the whole politics behind it too, you know.
Yeah, you know, you gotta get in with certain groups, and you know.
Right, it's a clicky thing.
Yeah, definitely click. Everybody has their own little, yeah, their little bandwagon. Yeah.
Especially the city. The city's like, if you don't break into the clique in the city, you know, you'll never get on any shows.
Yeah,
you know?
That is true. That is true.
And then the whole thing with. You know, with bringers and this, and you know, it gets a little crazy.
Bringers suck. I mean, I think for the beginning, all comics have to, you got to do it in the beginning, I think. But if you've been doing it for X amount of time and you got good material, it's like, I bring 18 people and you get a free DVD. It's like, come on now.
No, I know. It's a joke. I used to do a bit, and a lot of comics would give me dirty looks like, why do people have to bring someone? If the other comics that are on the show are so good, shouldn't they be able to draw an audience by themselves?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You should see the dirty looks I get when I do that bit, you know?
It's like, yeah, I mean, aren't you bringing people? Like, because you've been doing it for a while? Like, no,
right,
I just want
to
make sure.
Good. You should bring the audience without having to get a new comic. You think Eric Clapton has musicians on earlier to bring the audience?
Yeah, oh, then they say, like, the bringer is bring your fans. You know, it's like, come on, just, yeah, you want me to bring my buddies, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, so, yeah, no, it's all a dirty game. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's really hard. And then, you know, of course, the whole writing thing, coming up with new stuff all the time.
Yeah, not as easy, you know, in the beginning, you always have, like, your first beautiful, like, 10 minutes, and then, oh, I got to come up with some different stuff. Yeah, especially with open mics, because you got to basically come up with stuff every week, because I ran one open mic, and I'm like, I can't keep coming up with new stuff every week, you know, and I felt, when you do the open mic, you got to change it up for the people.
When I do an open mic, I just, like, I do a lot of just, like, talking to the audience, and I don't do my material.
Just crowd work.
What's the point of me doing, point of me doing material to an open mic audience, you know? So I work on my crowd work and work on, you know, just stage presence and all that stuff.
Nice. Doing the observations and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, what are you going to do your material for a damn open mic crowd? It's just a waste of time, right?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Well, do you have any shows coming up? Or?
Yeah, I have. Actually,
what do we got?
On the 6th, I'm at the 7th, I'm at a place in Richfield, Connecticut. It's a new show. I don't even know the name of it right offhand. And then on the 12th, I'm at the Eagle Tavern in Peekskill with...
Nice.
What's his name? I can't think of his name right now. And then on the 15th, I'm at Governor's in Levittown.
Ah, I've never done Governor's, but
a
lot of people that go over there.
I'm from Levittown. I grew up in Levittown. So usually when I do a show out there, I get a lot of people come and see me.
Nice.
And so the last time, actually, 22 people came to see me, which was fun.
You got the fans coming through.
Well, you know, but he doesn't tell me I have to bring people.
Well, that's always, you know, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, and then, which is good. And then, you know, I pick up shows here and there, and, you know, that's... it's fun, but so far I got 3 things in December.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, people got to roll out.
But you know, it's amazing, though, too. You see comics that I'm sure you see and I see that aren't even as good as me or as good as you, and they're getting 10, 15 shows a month, and you're like, how the hell does that happen, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, again, it's the friendship, the clicks, you know?
That's what it is.
Yep. You know?
That's what it is, but it's a catch-22 because... the more you get up, the better you get.
And if that's true.
If you don't get up a lot and on a show, you're not going to improve as quickly as someone else does, you know?
Oh, yeah. You go up there rusty if you're ever, like, spaced out your shows and stuff. Yeah, yeah, no, you always got to be warmed up.
Mics aren't the same thing. I always joke, I said, you know, you go to a mic, and if another comic chuckles, you know that's an applause break by a real audience.
Oh, yeah, if you get a comic to crack up, yeah. Because they're usually lost in their own – they're trying to prepare their own jokes, and no one's paying attention.
And then they're not going to laugh at your jokes, so.
That's true. And I think kind of all comics hate other comics. If that something was good, why didn't I come up with it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a jealousy thing. I think that's natural, you know. Everyone gets
jealous. Everyone wants to be the best of the night, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if you know my nephew, Mike. Mike Cannon. Yeah, he's a really good comic, and he's been in the game for about 10, 12 years.
Huh, I'd have to take it. If I saw him, I'm sure.
Yeah, he just got back. He was in the Middle East entertaining the troops.
Oh, wow, there you go.
Yeah, so he's pretty much a national act. He had an album out last year that had over 1 million views on iTunes.
All right, yeah, I probably
you don't know him.
I'm sure if I saw I'm getting a picture in my head, so I'm gonna say I do know. I don't know. I'm gonna take a gander right off
him. I'm sure you've crossed paths with him.
I'm sure. Yeah, if it's around this area, I've dabbled with him all at this point.
It's a shame I have to drop his name to get gigs. You know,
hey, whatever it takes. I'd be dropping names left and right. I'm gonna be dropping your name to get out of tickets. So we're good.
Yeah. Well, he actually put me on a show with him at Lucy's. He was headlining Lucy's last month, and he put me on with him.
Nice.
Which was nice.
There you go.
Yeah, he throws me a bone every once in a while.
Hey, take the bone, man. All right. Well, you know, I'm going to probably be rocking out to Lucy's. I'm your new partner, you know, crazy enough. We're like a buddy cop movie. So I'm going to be coming down to Lucy's, and I'm going to make the people laugh. That's my game plan.
That's excellent. Excellent.
And then, when I get pulled over, I'm dropping your name.
You live further north, right?
I'm in Monroe, New York, kind of like by the Woodbury Commons.
A lot of cops live up in Monroe.
A lot of cops?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I used to, that was the North Pole, man, traveling down from Monroe, you know.
Wow. All right.
That's
a
pretty long ride to the city from Monroe, right?
To the city, yeah, probably for the city, but Yonkers not too bad. Because I've gone down for Lucy's for their Heckler show, which not a huge fan of Heckler shows.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah, that was the last time I went there because I was like, let's see what it's up. And then just, I mean, encouraging people to yell at the comic was like, I'm like, this is just pointless, you know.
Yeah,
that's not a show where want to encourage people to yell at me while I'm up there.
Right, it's the same thing with those roast battles. I'm not really. I don't think that's comedy either.
No, I'm a nice guy. So I tried doing a roast battle. I got annihilated because I'm nice. I don't want to be rude, you know.
Right. I think it's a certain technique behind being a good roaster, you know.
Oh yeah, you got to kind of have to be an a-hole, and I'm unfortunately an angel, so it's different. But all right, you know what? I'm gonna wrap up the show. But man, you are fantastic. You're so badass. At least now I know. If I get pulled over, I can drop your name. If I kill people. Yeah, if I kill people, though, it's not going to work. So I'm going to hold off on that.
They're not going to let you go for that.
But, yeah, they're not going to let me go. Even if you came down to the station and you said, let them out.
Yeah, I don't think they'd probably.
No poll.
Hook me up and put me in there with you.
Yeah, that's true. If you knew about it, I guess you're an accomplice. So.
That's right.
Wow. All right. Well, I thank you so much. I'm going to get you back onto the podcast. The show is rocking out, and I'm going to watch actually Forensic Files after this call. So I'm going to be thinking about you.
Cool, Ryan. Great talking to you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and I'll see you at Lucy's.
See you at Lucy's on some Monday.
Damn right. I'll be there.
All right, brother.
All right. Later, sir.
Okay, bye.
Wow. Wow, well, there you go, peeps. Sergeant Bill Cannon. All right, you can't get more badass than that. The dude took me everywhere in the city. I feel a little grimy right now because I've been in an elevator with piss in it. But peeps, obviously subscribe. We got more awesome shows coming, celebrities. We're talking about sports, talking about video games, we're talking about movies. If you want entertainment, this is what we do. We don't just do one topic, okay, because that is a snore fest, okay? I'm not going to talk about Game of Thrones for every single episode, okay? I'm not going to talk about the NBA every single episode. No, I'm here to tickle you on every front. Your entire brain is big, and I'm here to scratch all of it, okay? I'm a verbal magician, okay? So what I'm going to do is hocus pocus. I'm going to make you happy. Peace. Peace out. And again, subscribe. YouTube, DTV Presents. What up?